Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Acton and my guest today is Andrew Dukewitz from Zone Coverage. Andrew, how you doing?
Good, man. Wolves back. Can we say it again?
Sure. Four in a row is reason to celebrate, even if some of the matchups were against lesser teams. But we'll talk about the insane Denver game, which is obviously one of their statement wins of the year so far.
Yeah, I mean, you could preface it by saying, like, Denver was shorthanded, but also the Wolves were shorthanded. I mean, the fact they won that game despite 61 points from Jokic, that's a statement. Like, I don't think there's many teams that could survive a 61-point game from Jokic.
Nope. Part of the reason he had 60 is it did go into double overtime, but... Yeah, I mean, the Wolves are, 14-3 since the start of March. Yeah. That's, I think, when they lost that Utah game without Ant, and it was clear that, like, people were going to start to get back healthy, and it was, and their schedule was obviously just, like they had the easiest schedule in the Western Conference. They still do, by the way. Just insane how easy the March on schedule has been for the Wolves. But it was clear, like, here's the time. They have winnable games, and even despite losing, I would call two of the three losses kind of quasi-unacceptable, the losing of the Pelicans and the shorthanded Pacers, they've completely turned their season around. They've gone from 32-29 to 45-32, and now we sit here, and they still have... like a not a realistic shot, but like a backdoor shot at like the three seed. Even Basketball Reference has that at just shy of a 9% chance. So everything's still in front of them somehow.
I mean, it's crazy, right? Like after that Utah game, after Ant got suspended for the tech, like I think we were starting to throw this up as just like a lost season, or at least like I was starting to think of this as like, okay, this might be just one of those seasons where it's a transition. Like Ant did make progress. Jaden's made progress. Like let's chalk up the wins, but they're probably a play-in team. And then they just absolutely rattle off win after win after win after win. And now we're sitting here like realistically looking at it of they're only two games behind Denver for the three seed. And I mean, you look at their record, 76ers tomorrow. That's going to be just as kind of disgraceful as the Nets game. They're not. I think 9 out of their opening day 15 are done for the year. They're not playing basketball at this point. You're going to face a Dameless Bucks in Milwaukee, which the Bucks are still fighting for seeding, but the Wolves wake up for those games. Then you have the Grizzlies, who are in an absolute free fall. And then you come back home and play the Nets and the Jazz, two of the bottom feeders again, who most of their team is on the IR. So this Wolves team, not only do they have like a backdoor chance at the three seed, I mean, they have a pretty good chance of like still finishing with 50 wins if they win out, which is insane. For all that's happened this year, to be still talking about a potential 50-win team is quite literally insane.
Yeah, and even like, a normal outcome would probably be winning the three slop games you have against Philly, Brooklyn, and Utah, and splitting the Milwaukee and Memphis games, and that's 49 wins, and I would be pretty shocked if that didn't get them out of the play-in. And I think at this point, about a week ago, I was like 48 wins is the target. I'm kind of now, I think 48 wins, because of all the weird tiebreakers, will end up with them as the 7 seed, unfortunately. But 49 wins is good enough, and 50 wins might have them hosting games at Target Center. But that game, the Memphis game on April 10th is obviously stands out as the biggest one. It's hard to put together a scenario where they win that game and aren't a top 6 seed.
I mean, it's just crazy. Like all the ups and downs this team has had, all of the, I mean, the beginning of the season where they're not gelling, the like win streak in December that had everyone like pumped for this team. Then they go out and drop. I mean, even thinking back to like in December, they had the like Western Conference win streak where they beat like Golden State, LA, and the Clippers twice. And we were so hyped that they were finally here, and then they fall off the map. They lost to the Wizards at home. Like there's just all of these games and times that you point to in the season where it was like legitimately, oh, this team doesn't get it. And then, like you're saying, they're 14-3 since March 1st. Julius looks like he is completely bought in. I mean, I haven't been like a huge Julius Randle like Knicks viewer, but like I know people that cover the Knicks. They were all saying like Julius has these stretches where like three or four games he gives you everything you want and he gets your hopes up, and then he'll have three or four games where it's just head scratching. I mean, we're looking at Julius now where it's probably about a third of the season, really, since the calendar rolled over into January, where he's been great. Dante is, I mean, quite literally fighting for the team. I mean, if you would have told me in December that Dante's getting in a crowd surfing fight for Naz Reid, I don't think I would have believed it. Jaden's been awesome. Everything's just kind of clicking at the right time, which when you're looking at teams going into the postseason, I mean, the Mavs did it last year. Everything just kind of fell into place in the last month of the season, and they ended up making the championship. I don't know if the Wolves are there yet, but I'm pretty confident that if they make the playoffs as a non-play-in team, meaning they don't play Oklahoma City, I think they could win a round.
Yeah, I think they could win two rounds. It's so much with the NBA playoffs is matchups. The Wolves got a nice matchup last year in the second round against Denver, a team that they could potentially play again here in the playoffs. And then they faced a team in Dallas who is probably quote unquote worse than them or Denver in a vacuum or whatever. But Dallas clearly had their matchup, and combined with Minnesota being tired from the last series or whatever, the Wolves lost. And so that's kind of the same thing. Obviously, the matchup, it's not even a matchup necessarily, but the team you want to avoid is Oklahoma City. They have their underlying numbers, have them as clearly the best team in the NBA and one of the best teams of the past, oh, I don't know, 5-10 years. They're kind of like what the Wolves want to beat. They're 4 points or 3.3 net rating points in defense behind ahead of the next team, which is something the Wolves did last year, but the Wolves were 17th in offense while Oklahoma City is third. So, that's just a team you don't want to face. But if the Wolves get Denver in the first round, a team that they've clearly been able to handle this year, and then Houston in a second round, like those are two teams that you can beat. While if you aren't able to get out of the playing tournament and you're facing Oklahoma City, that's just such a different path. But the Wolves' underlying numbers support them as one of the best teams in the Western Conference. They are ninth in offensive rating, sixth in defensive rating, and fifth in net rating behind Houston, Boston, Cleveland, and Oklahoma City. And really, the top three, Oklahoma City, Cleveland, and Boston, are so far ahead of everyone else. Houston has kind of separated themselves from the next group, but also Houston is certainly unproven and doesn't have, and this is kind of, maybe it's just a cliche that I overrate, but they don't have like a 1A superstar that you are extremely confident is going to win in the playoffs. That's one thing. While Oklahoma City is unproven, Oklahoma City 1,000,000% has that 1A superstar guy. As much as we want to, as much as Wolves fans want to yell a free throw merchant at him, I hope that Wolves fans also have a respect for how good Shea is. But ultimately, like, Houston is not a team, especially like a second round scenario, is not a team like I would be scared of for the Wolves. Even there's a good chance Houston doesn't make the second round. Maybe I'm underselling how good they've been this year, but like you need a. That's the other thing, along with the Wolves being fifth in net rating, is when you have the best player in a playoff series, it's very hard to overcome that. And you saw with the Wolves facing Denver, where they did not have the best player in the series, how difficult it was for the Wolves to win that series. They had to have everything to go right. They needed to have the advantage in the second, third, fourth, fifth players. And ultimately, as they did win the series, but it might have costed them if Jokic wasn't the best player of this generation and was just a normal all-NBA caliber player, the Wolves win that series in five or six, and maybe that's enough to probably not, but maybe that's enough to change the outcome of the West final. So it's just, it's so much about matchups, but ultimately the Wolves, their underlying numbers support them as one of the best teams in the Western Conference, and having Anthony Edwards versus, like, I would pick Ant over a lot of these players that they face. Ultimately, like, the Warriors have Steph, obviously. The Lakers have two of those type of players. Memphis is a team that, like, Ja hasn't had as good of a season as he's had in the past. We mentioned Houston. Yeah, it's just everything is there for them. But ultimately, they gotta get into the playoffs first, which they have not clinched yet.
I completely agree with you. Like, looking around the Western Conference, like, honestly, like, Houston, I think, is going to be, like, an interesting test case for, like, the second apron stuff. Because Houston has a bunch of really, really good players. No star. But it's, like, does the collection of talent beat, like, the top-end talent? And my biggest fear with Houston is Dylan Brooks. And that's from Houston's perspective. If I'm Houston, I'm terrified of having Dylan Brooks on my team, because he probably is going to take those last second shots. I mean, Dylan Brooks does that stuff. If he gets the ball and someone swings it to him and he's kind of open, he's probably shooting the kind of open shot instead of swinging it again. I mean, if there's one thing about them that, like, they do have those guys. I mean, Steven Adams, Dylan Brooks, Fred VanVleet, they have guys that have been in the playoffs before, but we've seen it so many times in the playoffs where if you just have the top end star in a game 7 closeout, you have a much better chance than if you're relying on, like, Thompson to drive into the paint or Jalen Green to try and get you 30. Honestly, the rest of the West, though, Denver, the Wolves have won 6 straight against them, and they don't seem to have an answer for Ant. I mean, when Ant finally started driving and attacking and getting motivated, I mean, they were trying Aaron Gordon on him, didn't work. Christian Brown, I mean, bless him, didn't have a chance. Peyton Watson held up okay, but, like, it's just tough to see Denver and where their path is, because at full strength, they're such a bad defensive team that I just don't know where they go. To your other point about the Wolves being, like, a playoff team based off of their ratings, I mean, the other thing they have that's crazy is they have so many different lineups and ways they can play that they can throw against you. If they want to go super big with Point, Ant, Jaden, Nas, Rudy, and Randall, they could realistically throw out 4, 6, 10 guys. They can also play ridiculously small with Randall at the 5. They can play zone. They can play drop. They can blitz off of pick and rolls. They can double. They can put Jaden McDaniels on a 6'1" point guard and just smother him. You sub Jaden out, you have Nikhil and Clark that you can put in. You don't lose hardly anything defensively. On offense, they can spread. They can attack. They can run pick and rolls. They have the Mike Rudy pick and roll lob game. They have Jaden that can score in that weird mid-range thing. This team has so many different ways to beat you that it didn't feel like they had that last year. Last year, it felt like there was a pretty clear path of, well, Kat needs to get 25, Ant needs to get 20 to 30, and we just got to hope someone else is making shots. And on defense, they didn't really have a lot of they didn't really have this type of flexibility. I know Rudy was playing great in, like, switches and stuff like that, but this year they can just put out so many different looks that gets me excited, because in the playoffs, you got to be able to adapt. You got to be able to put out different things to try and confuse teams, and the Wolves can do that this year.
Yeah, I think last year was kind of, they were winning by brute force, kind of. Like, mm-hmm. They had the best defense in the NBA, the best defense probably of the past 5 years of the NBA-ish, if you compare it to, like, league average. Now the Thunder have kind of, this year, have blown that out of the water. But it was just kind of brute force it. When it came to the playoffs, they just got enough scoring basically from Ant to win. I mean, Phoenix is a mess. But, like, even against Denver, they were just hounding them defensively, and that was enough. And they basically needed in that series one good Cat game to offensively. Cat was phenomenal defensively the whole series. But, like, they just needed one good offensive Cat game, which was that game 7. And it really was just a good half while everyone else was playing poorly to get them through that series. And like you said, they just have so much more options. Now their defense is not as smothering. The hope is that as the playoffs kind of ramp up, because so much of their issues this year have been self-inflicted, that, yeah. And it's likely going to cost them the home court in the first round. But they're not going to have letdown games in the playoffs. So that is the biggest thing. And just kind of, we can dig into the Denver matchup a little bit more, because I haven't done a pod since Tuesday night when the Wolves beat the Denver Nuggets in double overtime. One of the craziest games I've ever seen. I was just kind of thinking, what are the craziest games? Because I was thinking this after the Pistons brawl game. Well, what are the craziest games in a recent Wolves memory? And the first one, I think, with that sticks out is the last game of the season 2 years ago, the Rudy Jaden punch games, where Jaden punches Kyle Anderson, Jaden punches a wall, they win the game, but they lose two of their Jaden for the rest of the season, and Rudy gets suspended by the team for the Lakers playing game. I think this Denver game might be number two. What do you think?
I think it's for sure number two. Oddly, the game that came to my mind wasn't the punch one, because like that was just a debacle. It's the other Denver game where it was game 82. Taj Gibson locks up Nikola Jokic in the corner, and they make the playoffs for the first time with Jimmy Butler. And that's now, what, 8 years ago? But there hasn't been a lot of just crazy Wolves games. I mean, the other one that comes to mind, I think it was against...
And this is regular Memphis? Season. This is right. Regular season, by the way. Yeah.
Was it Memphis where Kat caught, like, almost a mid-court inbound pass and just, like, launched a three and drilled it to force, like, overtime? And then lost in overtime. That one was... But it's not as memorable, because obviously we can't remember it.
Yeah, the New Orleans game comes with similar stakes as that game 82, because if they had lost that, they were going to be the 9 seed and had to win two playing games. Mm-hmm. Where, like, I'm not sure they make the playoffs if they lose that game. Maybe they do, but they would have had to... They basically would have gotten a home game against OKC, which they proved that they could win that game. And then they would have had to go to likely New Orleans, and that would have been a complete toss-up. So, yeah, that was, like, similar to your game 82. But, like, the game 82 was, like, just a normal overtime basketball game.
Yep.
There wasn't... no one was punching each other. although it did... It did break the what was it, a 14-15 year playoff drought. So that's a good call out too, is that the Taj Gibson game, if you will.
This one to me though was just so, I mean, it had just so many twists and turns. I mean, the Denver starts out hot. Minnesota looks like, oh gosh, here we are again. They're not ready to play. They're down 16 after 6 minutes. Nikhil and Josh Minot come in, and I mean, Josh Minot has a 4-minute stretch that I don't think he's ever played that well in his life. Nikhil is phenomenal, just injecting energy. They crawl back into it by halftime. Ant starts to kind of figure it out around the third, and then he just goes supernova in the fourth. Overtime, the guy that saved him in the game the entire time in the first overtime bricks a couple shots in the first overtime, and then he makes a game-saving three and two free throws to win it. I mean, Nikhil was, I mean, he might have just officially gotten that contract re-signing this offseason if the Wolves decide to. And then, I mean, it's just, again, Ant. You see flashes of it where this guy at some point in his career is going to do this every night. And when he has that motivation where he's pissed off or on fire or whatever it is, and he decides a game is over or the Wolves are getting back into it, he just has the ability to do it. And it I kind of said it on the post game pod of just, if you're a Wolves fan, that has to be awesome, because 4 years from now, Ant is going to be doing that every single night. And when you're seeing flashes of it this early where he can just go toe to toe with a 3-time, maybe 4-time MVP and crawl back what they were down 8, and Ant just kind of single-handedly got them back into the game and forced overtime. The other thing that, like, that game, it's the first time I started thinking this way, but that game, I mean, the end of the game play calling by Finch to just Aunt Julius, it's getting kind of concerning. They won that game, but that was the first game where I was like, man, because all season, I'll preface it by saying this, and I know that was like a scattered thought, but it'll make sense. Like, all season I've been thinking, okay, Chris Finch is putting the ball in Ant's hand as the primary decision maker because he wants Ant to get reps as the primary decision maker. Chris Finch in the huddle draws up the best play that anyone's ever seen on a grease board ever. Ant's young. He goes rogue. Hucks a three. Crunch time offense sucks because Ant's young and not following the plays. The game against Denver was the first time where I was like, why aren't we just running this through Mike Conley to make a decision? This is an absolutely crucial game. We're now in end of the game and overtime and double overtime. And Finch is still kind of going through Ant and Randall. And they just aren't great crunch players. And it's the first time I've been like, uh-oh. Like, this might be an actual thing in the playoffs where we are losing a couple games because crunch time offense, Finch is just going through Ant. Whereas all season, I thought it was more he's going through Ant to get him reps than like a tactical error.
Yeah, one thing that was good to see was that in quote-unquote clutch time overall, they played either fine or well. Like, the last 5 minutes till like the last 2 minutes of the game, that stretch, they played well. So that's a good sign because they haven't done well in that space all year. And I think that'll carry over to the playoffs fine. But what you talk about is very worrying, is like just the last shot of the game or the last minute of the game. They're just not getting good shots. And it's hard to pinpoint why, at least in the Denver game, in the sense of Ant did get off the ball, which is something that obviously needs to happen when they bring two to the ball. And then they got not great looks out of it out of there after that. And so I agree with you, like maybe running something else, but it does feel like that is kind of, if you're looking for like red flags for how is this Wolves season going to end? It does feel like that's a big one. And it more or less ended that way last year. Like you think about the Luka shot in game two, if the Wolves get a bucket on the other end, instead of a really terrible turnover, they're up four instead of two. And Dallas probably isn't running that same play or whatever. The Wolves likely win that game. And to a certain extent, game one was very close too. Another laid bucket could have won that game. It is worrying, and I don't know. Ultimately, I think they're going to keep it in Ant's hands. They're not going to run. I just don't have confidence in, because they don't run a ton of like very heavily structured plays. Not as much as other teams do. I worry about just like giving it to Mike and it just kind of devolving into that same thing. And so instead of Julius getting a grenade with six in the shot clock, it's going to be with two. And I think you just got to lean into Ant. And ultimately maybe, cause one thing they did well all game, both games, the Denver game and the Brooklyn game, was find Rudy on the short roll. Yep. And I know people are going to see that and be like, so your answer to clutch time is more Rudy Gobert. I get that. But Rudy has been great on the short roll the entire season. He had
his entire career.
And I know like a lot of plays look bad when he tries to make a layup over and just bricks it. And I've never seen someone so often shoot a layup that hits the backboard, but not the rim. It's crazy. But like they just need to lean into that more, because that's how you get teams to stop doubling you and stop just, and some teams are just going to keep doing it because they don't have another defensive option. Denver stands out as there. Oklahoma City, you probably can't get them to stop playing like that because they have people like Dort that probably have a better chance and have shown to be able to guard Ant one-on-one. But how can the Wolves do better in those scenarios? In like the last second of the game, I don't really know. Maybe starting the play sooner, so that when it gets swung to Julius, because like that the shot Julius had, you just said, "Well, go to the rim." I don't think he really had enough time to go to the rim, because if he does, and someone makes a simple rotation, there's no time to kick out for a three, And also you're down one, like, mm-hmm. The game is tied. You don't need 3 points. You don't even need 2 points. You just need one. So you're kind of trying to hunt for a two. It's like one of those times where a mid-range shot is a good shot because you're just you don't care about points per shot. You're looking at field goal percentage as the metric you want. Yeah, it's concerning. I mean, they had basically three chances to win the game. They went more or less 0 for 3 until, I mean, one of the most insane endings. I don't know if you've watched the DNVR has live coverage. those have become kind of a treat for Wolves fans. They didn't realize that Westbrook had fouled on that last play. They thought they won. I thought, I forget his name. I should know it, but he goes, he Torrey Craig'd it. He immediately, and Jace picked this up on Twitter too. So in the bubble, this is Game 7, Utah versus Denver. Mm-hmm. Same, very similar situation where Denver has a fast break. They're up one with the shot clock off on the ball. Torrey Craig is a nugget at this point. Bricks a layup, and Utah's coming down. This is Game 7. I know it's the bubbles and Mickey Mouse, if people want to call it a Mickey Mouse, whatever. But this is Game 7 of a playoff series. And Mike Conley gets a shot up in the air to win a playoff series, and it comes up short. Denver wins. And this is an incredibly similar situation where Westbrook plays the Torrey Craig role, bricks a layup, and he had a similar play against San Antonio the next night too, unfortunately. And the Wolves kind of get a three in the air that doesn't go, but Russell Westbrook compounds his errors and fouls Nikhil.
Everyone thanks Zaza Pachulia.
Yeah, I mean, it was
those fouls were not called as often before Kawhi blew out his knee. Thanks Zaza in that Golden State Spurs series. But like, Westbrook is just, he's been good this year. He's been fine, but like, only Westbrook would miss a layup and then get a foul. But Westbrook is also probably just as likely to like make the layup and then get a block. And it's just kind of, it is what it is. I mean, we'll take the win.
Rob Perez and Twitter always puts it out. He's like, live by Westbrook, die by Westbrook. And that's what the Nuggets are, unfortunately, with their, I mean, especially obviously when Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray are out, but like, that's what they signed up for. I mean, I would probably argue that they shouldn't or didn't need to sign up for that at the beginning of the season. Like you said, Westbrook has been as good as could have been expected. And it's honestly been a nice, like, kind of career resurgence after like the Lakers debacle and some other stops in his career. It's been good to see, because he's a Hall of Famer. Like, he's one of the best players of maybe last generation, technically. Like, it's been good to kind of see him resurrect a career, because a lot of stars don't have like this kind of second state of the career where they're a role player, or in Westbrook's case, a bench player. Like obviously Allen Iverson is like the first example that comes to mind of someone that never really found that next state of their career. But I mean, that ending is just like an insane. I think the Wolves are fortunate to get out of that. Although if you think about the first overtime, the Wolves just completely blew that. Obviously, like, there's not much you can do about like, Aaron Gordon hit a tough shot and like Denver hit a couple shots, but like, the turnover when they're up two and all you needed was to get fouled and hit two free throws and you win a game, like, that's brutal. But they also came back and won it in double overtime and didn't fold there. So it's a crazy game that with all the people that were out, I don't think you can take much away from it, like, from a possible playoff series. But in the standings, it's obviously incredibly invaluable.
I mean, it's, to me, the only thing I take from it is the mental side of it, of like, these things do matter. When you're Denver and your star player goes for 61, there's a 61 point triple double, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you still lose, and now you've lost a playoff series to this team last year. You've lost all four games this year. Your star goes absolutely nuts and you still lose. Like, that stuff matters. Like, these NBA players are people. Like, if there's one guy on that team now that's sitting there in the fourth quarter going, oh man, this again, like, that matters. I mean, the other thing I guess I would take from it matchup wise is just, again, like the Wolves probably don't have a real good answer for Jokic. Like if Jokic is going to score, I realize there was a lot of stuff about like, oh man, if we had Naz Reid guarding him, Naz Reid does such a good job. It's like, yeah, but Jokic is just going to score. Like they didn't have anything slowing him down. And I don't think Naz Reid would have changed that, but the Nuggets really don't have anything for Ants either. I mean, again, they have no matchup. And if Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. are out there instead of, you know, Christian Brown playing that many minutes or Peyton Watson playing that many minutes, like they are significantly worse defenders than those two. Ant's going to be able to do whatever he wants to. So then it just comes down to the ancillary pieces. And like you said, Rudy Gobert on that short roll, like Jokic isn't going to stop it. Aaron Gordon does a pretty good job on it, but Aaron Gordon's often now having to guard Jaden or Ant or Randall because there's just more options on this team all of a sudden. I don't know. If I took anything from it, it just kind of confirmation bias that like Denver's going to really struggle if it's Minnesota Denver. And unless Jokic goes crazy, I just don't know what they're going to bring out. I mean, Jamal Murray, to your credit, Ryan, catching Murray throwing water bottles at people. I mean, or heat packs at people.
A towel. A towel at people. Heat pack and towel, yeah.
Heat packs and towels at people. Like, he has no answer to play the Wolves either. I'm confident with the Wolves if they get that 3-6 matchup and it's against Denver that they have a really good shot at pulling this off.
Yeah, I do think people have overestimated that a little bit just because, like I said, when you have the best player in the series and Jokic is like the best player in the world, the best player, I'm confident, the best player of this generation, this is even lowballing it, one of the 20 best players ever. That's like if he quit right now. Like, he's going to finish, this is the fifth straight season he's finished top five in the MVP. He might win his, I think this would be his, let me make sure I have that.
I think this would be his fourth in all five seasons he's finished in top two.
Right. Like, that is just,
insane.
Yeah, no, this is fifth straight season finishing top two in MVP. It'll be his he didn't get first team All NBA because of positions. That's hilarious.
Because of Joel.
Honestly, you could argue that the two, it seems like Shea's going to win. I haven't checked it lately, but like you can make the case if he doesn't win this year, the two that he didn't win are because of voter fatigue. Like he could, there's a world where he's a five straight most valuable players. That's incredibly unheard of. Like if I don't think I'm going to get any pushback saying he's a top 20 player all time, because that's just where he, if you're creating your list, like the next players at like his position there he's chasing down are like Hakeem, Shaq, and there's one more I'm forgetting, like that level of player,
Bill Russell. Like it's
yeah,
all-timers.
It's that I didn't include Bill Russell just because like it's so impossible to compare. Like Bill Russell won 11 titles and there was like 12 teams. Like it's so impossible, like to, because it, yeah, if you're going by rings, Bill Russell's way ahead of that level of player. And if you're just going by like your eyeballs, then Bill Russell is so.
To your point though, like he is officially in the Shaq, Tim Duncan, Hakeem Olajuwon, like
Duncan.
He is in that conversation, which is, again, he has probably six more years of really, really good basketball. Like he could win three more MVPs. I think he will win another ring before it's all said and done. Like he could retire as like a six-time MVP with two championships and then a career average of a triple double. Like,
so the reason
he has the potential to go down as like top five, where it's like Jordan, LeBron, Kobe, Jokic.
Right. So that's the reason that I like push back a little bit on the like we want to play Denver thing. It's like I don't really want to play that level of player. Now, I'm not sure the Wolves can avoid it at this point, because the other option of fighting up to like the five seed is you get the Lakers. Well, the Lakers have two of them, mother bleepers. They got obviously the first or second greatest player ever, and they got Luka, who I don't even want to even try to pick a number. Like, they got two of them.
He's too young. We can't pick numbers yet. Yeah. The Lakers, and this is a shameless plug. We had Craig Kilborn on the pod I host, or co-host, yesterday. And Craig kind of said it best. The Lakers are terrifying. Like, one, Luka and LeBron, but also, like, look at how many fouls they draw a game. Like, LeBron gets to the free throw line regularly. Luka draws a ton of fouls. Austin Reeves is top 10 in the NBA in fouls.
Like, that one is annoying.
The other two guys,
fair. I'm not going to say you, everyone else make their assumptions on why it's annoying, but the other two guys, obviously, like, Jokic had 24 free throws and that game, and I didn't hear one person complain about the refs. It's like, nope. And so if LeBron and Luka are drawing free throws, I, to a certain extent, people aren't going to be, maybe Luka a little bit, but like
Luka a little bit.
The Austin Reeves free throws are not fun to watch. Let's say that.
But that team is terrifying. Like, every second of those 48 minutes, you're going to have either LeBron, Luka, or both on the court. They have found a way to make LeBron even more productive at his age by flanking him with Reeves and Rui every second he's on the floor.
Do you remember how bad LeBron was in one of those early season Target Center games he came?
Yeah.
It was like, uh-oh, he's not going to score double-digit points. See, that's in danger here, which he's had, I don't know what it stands at now. He's had the NBA record for longest double-digit scoring game. He was so incredibly bad. I remember I sat in a pregame presser with listening to Redick, and he was just like unbelievably weird and frustrated with the media. I was like, coming off of like a Finch presser where he's just always incredibly nice, you can ask him some crappy question and he'll answer it to the best he can.
Yep.
And I thought the Laker media, they asked a brownie question, which I kind of get why he'd have frustrated, but I thought other guys were asking just fine questions and he was being like weird with that. Like, they just had bad vibes. And now, I mean, obviously Luka gets handed to them, but yeah, but also their underlying numbers are terrible. If net rating is a number that's important to you, like, the Lakers are terrible. And I don't think they're terrible, and I think they're good, but like.
Oh, the Lakers, I mean, you're right. Their underlying numbers are terrible. Like, 13th in offense, like, that's not ideal. I know a lot has been made about their defense as of late because they have been playing better, but they're still 15th overall on the season. Like, that's not good. I did look up the free throws. They're fifth in the league at 25 a game, and that's with Luka only playing, you know, 2 months on the team. I just think when playoffs start, they have the potential where Luka can steal you a game, LeBron can steal you a game, Reeves can steal you a game, and then they just need one more to win a series. I also don't think the Wolves match up really well against them anymore. Like, LeBron is probably Julius Randle draws that defensive card because Randle can match his physicality. Jaden probably gets Luka, but Luka ate him alive last postseason.
Luka is the reason.
More.
Luka, they don't have anything for Ant either. At least Denver is like good somatically defensively. Maybe the Lakers are too, but like they just have nothing for Ant, and the Wolves have nothing for Luka. But like the difference is like the Wolves have nothing for Luka because their good defenders are just not good at it. The Lakers just don't have many good perimeter defenders. And so like that would be like, that's going to be a series where they're probably going to need to like match bucket for bucket and for Luka.
And that's where we just don't know if he's at that level yet, which I'll be honest, I am expecting like another bump up in Ant this postseason where we're seeing primetime TV Ant every night. But the Lakers scare me. Denver, I acknowledge the point that like Denver is going to have the best player in the game every single game of that series. And if Jamal Murray shows up, that's a completely different team. It's just, there's just something about the Wolves when they play Denver. I mean, Mike Malone even said it. They play way harder when they play Denver. It's just, there's something there. Houston, I don't know about your opinion, but like Houston doesn't scare me. Like,
I would rather play Houston in the first round if it did mean going in the play-in tournament. So,
correct.
And then
forgetting Memphis, like Memphis doesn't, they're such a mess right now that Memphis doesn't really scare me. It really is like kind of there for the Wolves to take it. And if you win one playoff round, I mean, then it's like, then I think the expectations change. Like if they can win a playoff round, I think then it changes to like, oh, this team is like a borderline championship team. Like, let's see where they can go.
Yeah, it's just so hard to, I don't know. OKC is such like a juggernaut in the regular season. And I just, like, I worry how much of that carries over to the playoffs, but like ultimately if only 80% of it carries over to the playoffs, they're heavy Western Conference favorites. And if it all carries over, they're going to win the title. So,
They've had stars too. I mean, people kind of underlook that, like Shea has been in the playoffs multiple times at this point. Like he's had his deer in the headlight moment. I mean, Caruso is a grizzled dude. Hartenstein's a grizzled guy. J-Dub was in the playoffs last year. Like they've gotten some lumps at least. The only other team I didn't touch on is Golden State. I don't know your opinion on it, but like they just don't scare me. Like Steph obviously can go fuego and just win a couple games, but like the Wolves have so many players they can throw. I mean, Clark, Nikhil, Jaden, all of those guys they can throw at Steph for 48 minutes. And Butler's just a complete wild card at this point in his career. Like he just is. Like playoff Jimmy, I understand that's a thing, but he's now in his mid 30s and has had injury issues the last 3 years. General soreness injury issues, quote unquote, in the last 3 years. Other than those two, they don't really have anyone. Like Moses Moody, I don't know what he's going to bring in a playoff series. Kuminga's fine if he's your seventh guy. Like they just seem like they're way too thin.
Yeah. The Warriors are just kind of, I haven't even thought about that just because like the chances of them drawing them in a playoff series in the first round are kind of nil, but I tend to agree with you. They're another team that their underlying numbers, their net rating numbers don't shine as well. Maybe that's because of the first part of the season, but yeah, it's kind of like the mental battle with Draymond and Rudy would be the biggest thing. And I kind of think Rudy has his head screwed on straighter than Draymond's at this point. So I would tend to not, especially considering like the most likely scenarios, that's a second round series. Like that's not a second round opponent that I would have a problem with the Wolves drawing. But before we wrap up this one, let's talk about the Brooklyn game from last night a little bit. Wolves play pretty sleepy, but also didn't play like the comatose game that they've had against other lesser opponents. Ant was quiet for most, kind of similar to the Denver game. Ant was quiet most of the game and kind of turned it up at the end to let the Wolves kind of take him out before it really got anywhere close to done. I'm not sure if there was ever a point in the second half or even the entire game where it's like, oh, the Wolves are going to lose this game. It was just kind of like, uh-oh, they might have to try at some point here. But the big story, and this goes to the Denver game too, is Rudy Gobert has just been on an absolute tear. The Detroit game, he was phenomenal. The Denver game, he guarded Jokic most of the game before fouling out. And then this one had 18 rebounds, 21 points. To me, that's like the biggest thing heading into the playoffs is just like they need this version of dominant Rudy. To me, he's back to, I'm not saying he should win the award, but he's back to defending at a defensive player of the year level again, which he just wasn't for the first, I don't know, like two thirds, really before any time before he got hurt. He just wasn't playing like that. And the rebounding was especially like, what the heck is going on? He was just like, I mean, he's always kind of playing with canoe paddles out there, but like it was like the ultimate version of that. And it just hasn't been Like, it's been the exact opposite. I thought, like, specifically his hands have been so much better the past week or two or month. Like, he's just catching, like, so many, like, contested catches or whatever. Like, obviously, he has a height advantage over most people. But, like, just, like, someone, like, not fouls him, but bumps him, and he still catches it, and he puts it up and dunks it. Like, all of that. And then, the rebounding has just been insane. He's had close to 20 rebounds almost every game. And, like I talked about earlier, the biggest key for the Wolves offense, because teams are going to load up on Ant, is hitting Rudy in the short roll. Or really hitting any big in the short roll, but Rudy's the primary screen center. Hitting Rudy on the short roll and having shooters around that, and that's like kind of the worry with the starting lineup, but obviously they can bring in Nas and Dante to make that work. Mm-hmm. But hitting Rudy on the short roll, and they... Ant has done that so much more often, and the biggest thing, because it often seems like Ant is unwilling to do it because he's worried that Rudy won't succeed, was in the Detroit game, Rudy missed a layup over Schroeder on a short roll, and the next time down, Ant hit him with the same exact pass, and that was like a big thing for me, because I was like, okay, he saw Rudy screw up, it was a classic, just bricked layup by Rudy, and Ant didn't go, okay, well, I can't pass to him again, nope, right back to Rudy. And this was during a stretch like where the Wolves were rolling and needed to keep putting this second half after the fight. And like that was the biggest thing. And it just needs to keep happening, because I know more Rudy getting the ball more isn't what everyone wants. But with the way teams are guarding Ant, it's just like the pass that needs to be made.
I mean, James Harden Rockets getting Clint Capella the ball more wasn't probably the ideal, but getting Clint Capella the ball more led to a lot of wins. Trae Young, same thing with Clint Capella. Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz when Rudy was over there, same thing. Like, when they are doubling you that hard and doubling you immediately on a screen, you have to take advantage of it.
The Warriors built a dynasty on this exact action. If you go, there's a beautiful video on. If you go look up Book of Basketball on YouTube, there's a Warriors video about, I don't remember which year it is, but Game 6 in Houston. It's a Kevin Durant Warrior team that KD was hurt. This probably was 2019, because if KD's hurt, that's the he tears his Achilles in the finals. But just a beautiful video, and like I said, they built a dynasty on this action, because Draymond Green, for all his Draymondness, this was the biggest thing he did well was short roll, because teams like Ant are obviously doing the same with Steph. You have to. Boston played drop for like an entire finals and got roasted by Steph. You have to play up. And that leaves the short roll open. And it's just a beautiful pass. Steph hits Draymond on the short roll. He takes one dribble, draws the center over, kicks it Andre Iguodala, makes an instant pass to Clay, who makes like just a classic Clay Thompson. And you can see Chris Paul like going, like just like Clay doesn't even have the ball yet. And he's like, crap. And obviously the Wolves aren't that. The Wolves aren't the 70 win Warriors. But like it's just, the closest comparison to when Ant has been rolling has been Steph, honestly, with the shooting. And so teams are going to guard you that way. And like, that's just the one way to punish it.
To your Rudy point, I looked up his last 10 games and some things about Rudy. So last year, defensive player of the year, 2.1 blocks, 1.3 steals, 12.9 boards, 106.6 defensive rating. Last 10 games, 1.0 blocks, 1.2 steals, 12.9 rebounds, 102.2 defensive rating. I mean, Rudy's been playing elite. Like, he just has. His blocks are down because he plays a little bit different of a role without Kat there. I think they trust Jaden a lot more on, like, help defense in the paint. But, like, blocks don't tell the whole story. Like, a 102.2 defensive rating right now with how teams play is, I mean, that's elite. And if this is the Rudy we get going into the postseason, like that opens up, again, whole new doors. And the other thing is, like, I've gotten the chance to like talk to Rudy about it at practice. Like, when he isn't touching the ball on offense, even he admits his defense suffers. I mean, think about it. He sets 97 screens a game. He's constantly getting hit in the face. He's battling with the biggest, strongest guy on the other team offensively and defensively for 32 to 40 minutes a game. And he, some games, only gets 3 shots. Like, that sucks. No one wants to do that. And like, even though Rudy's a professional, he's been in the league for a decade, like, that still sucks. So, like, if they can find him three times a game on a short roll for, like, dunks, Rudy plays better defense. Because he's had some dunks. The crowd's cheering. He's feeling good about himself. Like, to me, and it's not just Rudy. Like, to me, that's the kind of story of the entire team. When the ball movement is good, this team is elite defensively. They are awesome offensively. And, like, it's funny you bring up the Warriors because, like, the ideal version of this offense is very Warriors-esque, where, like, Ant is setting things up. It's either going to Julius on the short row who can make the passes, or it's going to Gobert who can make passes. I mean, Randall is a very good, like, post-up on the block playmaker, like Draymond. Draymond doesn't really post-up. He more face-up, but, like, same spot on the floor, same playmaking ability. They have the just gunners that can shoot. They have the Andre Iguodala facility and, like, Jaden McDaniels. Jaden's probably not at Andre level, but Diet Coke, Andre Iguodala and Jaden at this point. Like, that's, I think, their path is just following that beautiful game, ball movement offense. And what we've seen over since March especially is this team has started to finally give in to not letting the ball just stick and all of the ISO stuff. Ant's ISO numbers are still pretty high, but, like, Randall's been passing, and, like, again, he's been giving you close to 20 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists every game. That's like a souped up Draymond on offense. I just keep saying it's so crazy with all of the, like, turns of this season that we're where we're at now. And to your Rudy point, like, again, we're going into the postseason where Rudy might be the most impactful player on this team. If he's able to do the stuff he's been doing offensively, it kind of makes up for the couple times a game he's going to get cooked in the mid-range or the bricked layup that he's going to have. I don't know. There's a lot of reason to be really optimistic about this Wolves team. Last thing on the Nets game is, like, if I realize we're 52 minutes into a pod here, but, like, NBA has to figure out tanking. Like, that game last night was like an insult to basketball. The Nets were down 10 points in the fourth quarter. D'Angelo Russell is sitting on the bench. He finished with 14 points. Nick Claxton was their best player in the game last night. He finished with less minutes than Drew Timmy. Like, Claxton's their starting center playing 24 minutes in a close game in the fourth quarter. The reason he doesn't is because if Brooklyn wins, they have no shot at getting the 5 seed. Right now, the upcoming opponent, Philadelphia, is the 5 seed. And they only have a 2-game lead over that 5 seed from Brooklyn. So we're going to see just as much terrible, like, basketball on Saturday, which for the Wolves, awesome. For me, old man, get off my porch. I like watching basketball. I just hate it. I hate watching tanking teams.
Yeah, I get it. Ultimately, I'm not sure the play-in tournament has done smoothing out the lottery odds have done as good of a job kind of fixing the tanking of it all. Ultimately, I'm not sure a good way to do it, because, like, I've heard, like, the last team out of the playoffs gets the number one pick. And it's just like, that's worse. All that's going to do is incentivize, like, teams playoff like teams that tank. Are playoff teams to tank. That's worse. At least if you get the crappy teams to tank, that's better than that. But ultimately, it's not great. It's something that they need to try to fix. I personally don't see it as a giant thing, just because it's just like, the Nets were trying for a good portion of the year, and, like, Philly's an example of Philly didn't want to lose. Just everything, everything tore down. So I don't disagree with you, but I also just, I think that, like, while it's not great, there is so many, like, fun games each and every night that have, like, gigantic stakes. Lakers Warriors last night was huge. The Warriors play the Nuggets tonight. That's gigantic. Like, that's like whoever wins Warriors Nuggets is almost clinched into the playoffs. Like, it's going to be hard for either team to fall out after that. And so, like, there's just, like, those are fun, and it stinks that like you said, it's helpful for the Wolves because they've backlogged all these tanking teams that might have been trying to win earlier. But I'm kind of more focused on the good basketball, but like you said, you don't like the Wolves don't play a good team for about a week here.
So we just get to watch Philadelphia and it'll be fine. Yeah. And they'll win. There's probably going to be like a cool dunk. Like it's
fine. Yeah. Well, after that Philly game on Saturday, probably the biggest two game stretch of the Wolves season, Bucks in Memphis. I am driving out to Milwaukee to go see the Bucks. Fun little vacation, I guess, for me. But then they close the season with two more of your, I'll call them your Brooklyn Nets and your Utah Jazz.
Fair.
Which should be three easy wins on the schedule and two toss-up games. I would just kind of put, thinking about it, the Wolves most likely seed is the sixth. If you're looking at playoff probabilities, I use Basketball Reference. They have a better shot at five than they do at seven, which is interesting. 9% shot at three. But most likely seed is five or six. The most likely team to be the three seed is the Denver Nuggets. So if you'd add to power rank your most likely seedings, it would be three Denver, six Wolves. And like we said, kind of talking this whole pod, Denver is a team other than that big Serbian guy is a team that the Wolves like. And then Houston or whatever seven seed isn't necessarily a team you'd be terribly afraid of in the second round, and then conference finals are champagne problems at that point, even if it is OKC. But yeah, before we go, Andrew, you got anything to plug? I know you had a fun, you already mentioned it, a fun guest on your pod with Daily Wolves.
Yeah, Craig Kilborn joined us. He was, I mean, he's awesome. If like as advertised, super, super insightful. He's just a really big diehard Wolves fan. If he ever comes on again, I think we're going to just avoid basketball and talk like Daily Show and like what he mm-hmm. does with his life, because he's just interesting. But other than that, yeah, the Daily Wolves, I've partnered with them. I'm still with Zone Coverage, credentialed writing, but Daily Wolves, partnered with them. We do a post-game podcast every single game as soon as the last tip or last whistle blows. And we just try to have fun. We've been trying to get more fan engagement. We've worked out a way to get fans on the show, a la like Vikings vent line and stuff like that. And just trying to bring something different to the market, just to have a little more fun. Other than that, still have articles coming out every, oh gosh, what is it? Tuesday, Saturday. So you can always find those on Zone.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll potentially talk to you in the playoffs or unfortunately, maybe the season will just end unceremoniously in a couple weeks. Obviously, we don't hope that happens, but I guess you never know.
You never know.
Yep. Well, thank you everyone for listening. We'll see you next week. Go Wolves.
Ayoo!